and welcome to the Brown Sports Convos Podcast Zoom Edition. My name is Samuel Reed, coming at you from Little Rock, Arkansas, because the pandemic is not over, folks. And with me today, we got some dudes who are here to talk about sports things. Introduce yourselves.
I'm David Cody from coming at you from Providence, Rhode Island.
Ethan Jobson, also in Providence, Rhode Island.
And yeah, I'm Mike Smith, also from Providence.
Yes, and the semester is about to start for us, so we're gonna probably be hopping back on the content machine a little bit more regularly now that we're not, you know, in a holiday season spending time with family. Now we can just try to avoid our problems by talking about sports.
And that's right.
Yeah, so that's what we're here. Speaking about avoiding problems, the Nets have run headlong into one. You guys may have heard about this. You probably have seen some takes on Twitter about it. We just got to get it out of the way. Jared Allen is on the Cavaliers now, and we absolutely have to talk about it. It was
the new big three.
Yeah, the huge three: Larry Nance Jr., Kevin Love, and Jared Allen. Andre Drummond is also there. Anywho, no, we're going to talk about the blockbuster trade for James Harden that the Brooklyn Nets have made. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of assets were at play here. This is a pretty complicated one. The Cavs got involved for like cap reasons, I think, and the Rockets ended up getting four first rounders and four draft pick or draft swaps. Like, there's just a lot of moving pieces, but let's start with our resident Brooklyn Nets fan, Ethan. How do you feel about how this trade went down?
Overwhelmed? Like, I've spent the last day trying to process this trade, and it's really hard for me, especially given the fact that, first of all, we don't even know what Kyrie's involvement with the team will be. So we don't know if this is a big three situation or basically like the older version of the 2011-12 Thunder. There's also the fact that we gave up in terms of current roster construction, in terms of LeVert and Jarrett Allen. And there's also the fact that we gave up in terms of the future. So there's a lot to process. I feel like I've started to talk myself into it just on the basis that, like, first of all, like, I've seen some comparisons to the Celtics trade. And the one thing I'll push up back on is it's not that bad. This is a legitimate team of people, like, players at the end of their prime at worst, who were all MVP candidates not too long ago. In terms of personalities, then maybe I can see the comparisons a little more. But it's hard to say anything. I know this is the ultimate cop-out, but I just kind of want to see how things go at first, because, like, I don't know what our team's going to look like, really. Is it going to be, like, point Harden instead of Kyrie, and is Kyrie going to be busy doing, like, activism stuff, or is KD going to be at the five? I know this is, like, the ultimate cop-out, but I honestly don't know what to say.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and I think that's a fair answer. I think – so I'll put out my perspective before going to the other two here. My perspective is this is a volatile situation, right? You want to talk about chemistry on teams, and I don't think I've ever seen a more potentially volatile situation than the current construction of the Brooklyn Nets roster. Like you mentioned, Kyrie Irving, he is AWOL. He has not told anybody on that team where he's going, why he's gone from the team, or at the very least, the team isn't willing to share those details with us right now. And so we know that Kyrie Irving hasn't played for a little bit of time right now, and we know that he's still doing things. He's still out there living his life, doing everything except basketball, it seems like. Kevin Durant has been doing very well on the Brooklyn Nets. I think, like, he's just out here saying, hey, you shouldn't have been worried about me. I come off an Achilles tear, and I make those shots. I still got buckets. I still got all the skills that made me a top three player in the league, and he's playing like one right now. Kevin Durant, best scorer in the league still, and he's a guy who you can entrust a team to, and the Nets have kind of had to recently. And so it's kind of worth talking about, like, how much did Kyrie know about the James Harden situation? Some reports came out that his relationship with KD was strained. Other reports came out that he was just waiting for the right moment. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know why things are happening exactly the way that they are. But what we do know is that the Nets have lost a good bit of depth by trading away Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, and a couple other bench guys that, you know, maybe the Nets fans are going to miss because they were the core of the roster, the young core a couple years back. But, Brooklyn is really committing to this season, maybe the next season too.
Yeah, okay, so I'll throw in my opinion on this. I think that this was kind of a defensive move for the Nets, which is weird to say. But I think it takes a lot of the leverage out of Kyrie's hands. In that this was a move, to ensure that KD re-signs at the end of his contract. Because if Kyrie's gone, then it's just Kevin. And the main reason why he came to Brooklyn was because he could join up with Kyrie Irving and team up with him. So with the addition of James Harden, that's another incentive for Kevin Durant to stay. And I also don't think that this is a move for right now. This is more a move for next year. They could win the chip this year, maybe, if everything works out perfectly. But I think that this sets them up quite nicely for next year once Dinwiddie is back from his ACL tear. Because with Dinwiddie back, that's an addition of a very, very, very solid bench piece that could start on a lot of NBA teams. They can either keep him, they can trade him for a very solid big man. They have Nick Claxton as their backup five right now, and he's very underrated. I like him. I like his game a lot. But if they want a solid piece, they have Dinwiddie there for trading. And they also have Landry Shamet. I doubt they'll trade Joe Harris because they just signed him to a big boy deal. But with Landry Shamet and Dinwiddie, they can trade one, maybe both of those guys. Four solid bench pieces. And also, they have three vacant roster slots right now. So, my prediction, maybe they sign Rondae Hollis-Jefferson back. I know he got cut by the Raptors a couple weeks ago. So, maybe he's their Taurean Prince replacement. And then they got to be active in the buyout market come deadline time. That's just got to be what it is. But also, I want to focus on the Rockets a little bit because they made a wild swap after the trade to get rid of Caris LeVert and to pick up Victor Oladipo. That was very interesting on multiple fronts. One, I like Caris LeVert a lot, and he's under contract for 2 years, whereas Oladipo's on an expiring deal. So I can see why they took Oladipo, because that's a trade piece come deadline time. But it's really interesting because there's already reports coming out that Oladipo is looking for a way out of the Rockets, and he prefers the Heat as his number one destination. I find that really, really interesting because if I'm the Rockets, I don't know if the return that I'll get for Oladipo is worth giving up Caris LeVert as a guarantee for the next 2 years to build around with John Wall and Christian Wood. So I'm really interested to see what the Rockets do come deadline time and the Cavaliers, because with the addition of Jared Allen and Andre Drummond on an expiring contract, we're basically setting in stone that Drummond's going to be dealt at the deadline. So I'm really curious to see where he goes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I feel like this is.
I'll sling it over to you. I think what we can all agree on is that this trade leaves a lot of teams in situations where they're clearly not done. They're still gearing up towards something. But I think the question that every podcast is going to want to talk about, every podcast is going to want to answer is, what's the ideal outcome for the Brooklyn Nets right now? What is the fully realized form of Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and Kevin Durant on the Nets? Could they beat the Lakers? I think that's the hot button question that doesn't really ruffle my feathers, but we got to talk about it.
Right. And I think this is a team obviously, if Kyrie comes back to play, this is a team whose ceiling is immensely high. This is a team where if everyone's scoring well, they could average like 120 a game. Seriously, like I think there are two main concerns that I have when I'm looking at this Nets team. Is the first thing has to be chemistry, and I mean that's a concern no matter who gets traded. But when you have a big roster turnover moment mid-season like this, you wonder how in sync this team will be by the time they get to the playoffs. They look pretty damn unstoppable at times already this season with Kyrie and Durant when Kyrie was here. There's a lot of ball dominant players, so it's going to be interesting to see how they're able to work together. And my other concern is, and I hate to sound too much like a football guy, but looking at this roster, you wonder like where the grit is going to come from, like who your rock is, who your defensive stoppers and kind of effort players are. Because obviously you have an incredible amount of talent at the top, but you did lose some of your depth with that trade. So you look at this roster, you think, so is DeAndre Jordan going to be their rock? Is like a Jeff Green going to have to be their rock? Or do they kind of, like Michael was suggesting, try to swing another deal to get some help in the front court? Or does Nicholas Claxton step up? Who knows? But the ceiling is very, very high. So I feel like it's going to be finals or bust for them this season, next season, as long as they're able to keep this core together.
I mean, so, Ethan, yeah, let's hear the cautious optimism from a person who has a vested interest in this team.
All right, so let me be full disclosure here. Here's my Homer reasons for optimism as a Homer that I've done to try to, like, talk myself into this trade last day. So take it with whatever grain of salt you want to take it with. The ways I guess I could justify this is that, like, one, speaking of, like, grit and, like, kind of influence, the last time the Nets made a trade for a win-now move where they traded a lot of their future, I remember my justification for that time was that, oh, Pierce and Garnett want one last title, man. They're going to bring this grit, this veteran presence, this wisdom, and it's all going to go great. And that didn't exactly end up happening. So maybe that stuff is slightly overrated versus just pure talent. Two, I'd say that with, like, what we've seen with the Nets is even, like, when we had a lot of opt-outs during the bubble, the staff we had with, like, Jacque Vaughn and people showed kind of that even with, like, the roster level that we have now around KD, Kyrie, maybe, and Harden, we've been able to get some significant contributions. Even saw in the Knicks win last night that guys have had a player development mechanism where it seems like we can coach guys up to contribute. I think maybe I can see where Marks is coming from and that he has faith in that when making this trade. And the last thing I'd say is that we do have a somewhat of a blueprint for this, not exactly, but with the Lakers, when they got AD and shipped off all their young talent, and everyone was like, where's the depth going to come from? And they filled out their roster with kind of like guys, you know, and people were skeptical, but they ended up doing it enough of what they had to. And obviously there's differences in that, like, there's definitely concern about the Nets in terms of like how concentrated depth is at certain positions, which wasn't as much a problem with the Lakers, I'd say, but at least in terms of the idea, you can see, you can talk yourself into the idea, especially maybe you can talk yourself into D'Antoni running the micro ball again, where you could just, talent could overpower a lot of those other concerns.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And I think that if you're looking at the collection of talent alone, right, in terms of basketball, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and James Harden are three of the best players you could ask for to have on a basketball team. They are some, my team had Kyrie Irving on it for like not that long. And whenever I saw him go to work, he was just absolutely mesmerizing. He is a wizard at just finding shots and creating stuff out of nothing. And Kevin Durant is, you know, a genius at that. And look, James Harden slander, we were all about it in this pre-pod. I think that he brings a lot of culture concerns with him, and you see that when, you know, one of his – a person that he's pretty close with in Russell Westbrook walks away from that team and says, there are culture concerns. There are real, legitimate work ethic concerns coming out of the Houston Rockets and, you know, this pandering towards James Harden. And I think that when you see that kind of stuff, you're like, all right, you know, I don't think I want to build my team around James Harden. But you look at his pure production over the past however long he's been on the Rockets, he has been a top three MVP candidate every year since like 2015. Probably even 2014, you can make an argument that he should have won that year. And that doesn't come from nothing. He is as pure of a scorer as you'll find in this newly vamped stretch floor league. And he gets people involved in a big way. I think that from a talent perspective, the Nets have assembled a really, really interesting group of people here. I would say when you were talking about the Lakers, and I think that's an interesting comparison point, because if you look at what LeBron and AD bring to the table, right? LeBron being this playmaking wizard who can just makes everyone around him better is the common phrase used, but he does. He handles the ball. He just is a force of nature. And you got Anthony Davis, who is probably one of the best rim protectors in the league, and is as unstoppable of a scorer at the big man position as you can get. And it's like, they complement each other, right? They bring things to the table that the other is really happy to have. You combine LeBron's playmaking skills with Anthony Davis's physical prowess and his just ability and skill on both ends of the floor, and you get a championship. That's what they got. I just feel like there's a little bit of overlap here, right? There's 24 seconds on the shot clock, and you can't have three guys who are going to be dribbling for 10 seconds each, right? And I just worry that in an ideal situation for the Brooklyn Nets, isn't that just doing what they did on the Thunder? Isn't that staggering James Harden and Kevin Durant's minutes so that you have one guy out there at all times who can just always get you a bucket? And I think if that's the case, you're getting kind of diminishing returns on the talent.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, the 2011-12 Thunder isn't like the worst thing to – I know they didn't end up winning a chip, but it's like, it did pretty damn well.
Not saying that that's a bad thing. All I'm saying is that you can't just look at these two MVP candidates and like an all-star point guard and Kyrie Irving and say like, oh, the three of them together, they're going to score 90 a game between the three of them. Like, that's not really how basketball works.
No, I'd agree. And I think that's the one thing that concerns me. I think my biggest concerns, in contrast to my rationalizations, is that I feel like our roster construction had already been pretty good, and I thought it fit in a lot of ways, even if it wasn't like a talent level that guaranteed like a championship. I feel like we gave up a lot of our future for a new roster construction that is talent wise, obviously, well and above where we were. But in terms of roster construction, I'm not sure that I can take it to the bank like it's that much better, or even that it's better at all. And it's so hard for me to just make a judgment, because I feel like I could easily imagine myself saying, oh, this is a disaster, and we go out and look all world, or saying, oh, did you just see what we've done? We've gotten Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and James Harden on the same team, and just see it completely blow up. So, yes, I'm being that person who, doesn't make any bold prediction because I don't want to look bad.
Well, let me ask you this, Ethan. Who's out there on the market? Who do you think is going to be available when the buyouts start happening that is really going to shore up this roster's holes? Because I'm looking at this depth chart right now, and Claxton's out with a knee contusion. And, you know, you can expect him to be back by the playoffs, but Dinwiddie is out for the season with the ACL tear. And, like, you're basically looking at Irving and Harden being your point guards on this team. Like, they're the ball handlers. And, like, Kyrie Irving, is he coming back to the Nets? Is he coming back to the roster? How do you feel about Jeff Green? How do you feel about – I know you like Bruce Brown and what he brings on defense, but, like, I don't know. What do you think there is out there that, like, makes this team better?
I saw Andre Drummond brought up as a buyout candidate, actually, which I think is interesting. It's hard for me to say exactly, though. Like, yeah. It's like, in terms of bigs, like, I honestly don't know, because there isn't – it's not, like, just, like, a proven rim protector, or even, like, a proven, like decent rim protector is just grows on trees, you know?
Yeah.
Which is one of the concerns of losing Jarrett Allen, you know?
Yeah, I think being left with DeAndre Jordan at your starting center, like, there's not really a lot of great upgrades there, right? Like, if you're looking at the Lakers, right, they brought in these kind of out-of-commission, oh, the league gave up on me kind of 30-something vets who were looking for a home, were looking for a chip, right? Like, you bring in Dwight Howard, you bring in JaVale McGee, and, like, you know what they're bringing to the table. And, like, they've had roles that were maybe bigger on previous teams, but you know, they were asked to come in, take a vet minimum. You know, they got bought out wherever they were, or they traded for them with minimal assets, and they said, hey, do this one thing for 10, 15 minutes a game. And I just don't know how much of that is out there for this Nets team.
Yeah, speaking of him, I feel like if the like JaVale McGee, Dwight Howard candidate for the Nets basically is DeAndre Jordan. Like, he looked better last game. Maybe it was just an effort thing. And maybe that's what I wanted when we first got him. Was like, maybe if he
Yeah, that's what you want out of DeAndre Jordan for the money you're giving him, you know? Maybe this is what unlocks the next level. It's like, oh, we got a shot. We got a shot here.
Yeah. It's just hard for me to bet on, like, his effort is going to be different from what he's shown for, like, 3 years now. Like, but
well, I would go as far back as his last days on the Clippers. I think for, you know, the last 3 to 4 seasons of Lob City are, like, around the time Chris Paul left, right before Blake Griffin left. Like, DeAndre Jordan had already kind of become a subpar defender for – and he's been so for a few seasons now, I think. Like, he has the reputation of being this rim-running guy, but he hasn't really been that in a few seasons, I would say, since, like, 2017, 2016 even. And I think that's a concern. It's like, does he have that gas in him, or is that just like his knees giving out? He's getting older. And I think that's a legitimate concern when you look in the East. And it's like, I'm not a Sixers fan by any means. I think that's a really poor roster construction. But they're 8-4 right now, and you're gonna have to play them in the playoffs at some point. And like, how do you contend with Joel Embiid? You got the Milwaukee Bucks, and it's like, what do you do about Giannis Antetokounmpo? Are you gonna have KD on him 40 minutes a game? That seems like it's going to be really tiring. It seems like it's a tough defensive assignment, to say the least, even with KD's physical attributes. I would say there are tough teams in the East right now that may exploit some of these holes on the Nets roster. And, you know, Ike was talking in the group chat saying, like, you know, oh, we know they're going to the Eastern Conference Finals, but, like, I wouldn't be surprised if this is a second round out because they meet somebody that they just don't know how to defend or don't have the you know, they don't have the roster. They don't have the bodies.
I think it's a very boom or bust team. It's funny that you mentioned the Sixers, because the one thing I think we haven't talked about with the Nets too is also coaching. And I feel like this is very much starting to seem even more than the start of the season like a Mike D'Antoni team, with everything that that brings to mind, you know. When you think of Mike D'Antoni, you think of, like, a legendary coach who can do great things, but who has also had that, like, consistently had a ceiling with his teams. He's never been able to get over a certain hump, at least so far. Whereas, like, I know the Sixers got Dave Joerger, who was one of my – one of the guys I wanted as a head coaching candidate for the Nets. on their coaching staff this year, and they have been playing a lot better. So I just think it's interesting to see how these different visions line up for a team. And I'll be honest, I think if we had Dave Joerger as our head coach, I would feel somewhat differently about this team. Like,
This was a topic that we talked about a little bit. We were talking about Steve Nash and, you know, whether we thought that his hiring as a head coach was a good idea for the Nets. Because, I don't know, one of the pitches that that people made was like, oh, you know, he's a player's coach. He's the friendship guy. He led the league in fist bumps when he was a player. And, you know, he's tight with KD from his time on the Warriors. And, you know, maybe he's the guy who brings Kyrie into the fold. And now he doesn't even know where Kyrie is. He doesn't know what he's doing. So, you know, maybe there's
reports too that apparently Kyrie was not happy with the hire, which is impressive.
Yeah, I did see that. That was, golly. It seems like it could be a big mess. Maybe this is just, I don't know, Kevin Durant might just go off and win the championship, and he's just going to come back and start tweeting about, oh, y'all exploited these narratives that, like, just weren't real. And it's like, maybe that's what's going on. Maybe it's just gotcha journalism or whatever. But it does feel tenuous. It feels volatile. And I think that that's in no small part due to existing factors before you factor in James Harden, who has had a very fraught history with the Rockets over the past several months.
I just want to bring David and Michael back into the conversation. You guys have any thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely want to look at this from like a more positive point of view. In that, like, if you have a roster like this, I'd be most comfortable with it in D'Antoni's hands. Because he does have experience with small ball. And I actually was a big fan of what they had going with the Rockets last season. I think that if they had one offseason with Daryl Morey and D'Antoni at the helm for one more year to actually get, like, above average shooters instead of just using what they had, they would have had something really special in their hands, I think, in my opinion. So, and not to mention, Kevin Durant is a very, very, very underrated rim protector. I forget what season it was, but at one point he was like top five in blocks. And I think that his rim presence, it's people downplay it because he's a quote-unquote small forward, but he can chill in the paint and get the job done. And I think that's the benefit of having James Harden and Kyrie there, assuming he's back. Like Sam was talking about how, yeah, KD might get tired defending the paint for 40 minutes a game against Giannis or maybe Joel Embiid. But I think that's what you have those other superstars for, so that they can take those offensive touches so that Kevin Durant isn't burnt out halfway through the game with 24 minutes left to go. Mm-hmm. And Embiid staring at you, like licking his lips in the paint. Like I think there's a lot more upside to this roster, and also they do have three superstars, so they are going to be major buyers in that buyout market in like a month or so.
Yeah, they have to be.
Whenever that, they really have no option. But players are going to want to go there, and I do worry about the players that will be available. I remember in the group chat we were talking about maybe Nerlens Noel from the Knicks.
Yeah,
I actually kind of like that.
Yeah,
he played quite well. He missed out on a massive contract a couple years ago, but I think that what keeps him in the NBA is his rim protection. So if he is available, the Knicks agree to a buyout with him, which I actually am not sure about because the Knicks look quite promising. No lie, they have a lot of good young guys. I am a Knicks fan, I'm a little biased, but. I think that Nerlens Noel would be a great option. I was looking – while you guys were talking, I was looking around the NBA at different rosters. Mm-hmm. And there is a very, very, very small amount of centers, of rim-protecting centers out there that are not on contending teams and have a buyoutable contract. Like maybe Robin Lopez from the Wizards, but he literally just signed there this offseason. So I don't know if that's going to happen.
But speaks to what Ethan's saying, right? It's like these guys don't grow on trees, but you also don't need five of them, right? You need like one or two that can eat up a couple of minutes, like you know, hold Joel Embiid to 50% instead of 60%, or like, you know, keep Giannis from just scoring 20 in one quarter. Keep him down to like maybe 12.
Maybe
you just need a couple of those guys, and like you hope that the superstars take it from there.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they are not going to win the championship this year.
I think it's a tough note.
I think that they will be in a great position for next year, and I think they aren't too worried about winning right now because KD and Kyrie and Harden are all under contract for what, 3 more years maybe? So, yeah, it's a marathon, not a race, not a sprint.
I mean, if you're a Nets fan, you have the benefit of not having to worry about a lot of those looming free agency contracts or the looming extensions because you traded them all away.
I think you just got to think about this like a really long preseason.
Isn't LeVert going to be eligible this summer for like some big money? I think he's going to get paid. Like he's not going to be a free agent, but I think he's eligible for a rookie scale extension. I don't know. How old is LeVert? LeVert's not that old. He's like 24.
He's like 24, right? I think he has 2 years left, so I think he's up for that big deal next year or the year after.
He wasn't a one-and-done guy in college, so he's a little older than you might think. But
Yeah. But he – I think he's still – he just did his rookie extension.
Not to 26, actually.
Yeah,
I feel like he's 26.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of money up for grabs on the Nets roster prior to this trade, and now there is not, because you have James Harden and Kevin Durant, who are both on fairly large contracts, and you're paying DeAndre Jordan a lot more than he has produced.
I mean, that was a part of the whole signing KD thing.
They
both took less than max, so that
Jordan, it's the KD Kyrie tax.
Yeah, that was very interesting. But
I want to really quickly hit a couple of these other teams before we move on with this topic. I mean, the Pacers got involved. Oladipo was going to be his contract's expiring, and he was going to be leaving Indiana at this offseason, so this trade makes a lot of sense for them. They get Caris LeVert, who's got a couple more years there, and they can afford to give him some money. And the thing with Oladipo is that he had that one breakout season after getting traded from Oklahoma City to Indiana, but he's been struggling with injury ever since, and it just didn't seem like the stars were aligning for them. With LeVert, you get a guy who I think pairs really well with Domantas Sabonis, who's going to be a fixture in Indiana for a while, and he's going to slot really well next to Malcolm Brogdon. I think the Pacers have a respectable core. They're not going to be winning any chips anytime soon, but you know, they're going to be a perennial playoff team for a few years to come, and I think that's exactly where this trade puts them.
Yeah, I think it shouldn't be lost just how well Malcolm Brogdon has been playing this year, and stepping into that role as a distributor, as like almost a true point guard for them. And it'll be interesting to see what that kind of like scorer that Caris LeVert is will slot into them. I think their ceiling is very, very low this year, but I think they have something to build on.
Yeah, and you wonder if just being in a different situation where you're not playing behind these two bigger superstars, or you have like a team that is not really gunning directly for the finals immediately. You wonder if this different situation is going to give LeVert some opportunity to grow, some opportunity to show some stuff that he wasn't able to show the past season.
Yeah, he did really well in the bubble when KD and Kyrie were both out. Like, he fought quite hard in that playoffs run that ended quite early. But like, he had some amazing bright spots, and I'm a big fan of that guy. So I think that he'll do really well with the Pacers. And with Oladipo, he's actually doing very well this year too. Like, I think he's averaging like 20 points a game on a decent percentage. Yeah, it's like 36% from three, which is solid. And then around 40%+ from the field. So I feel like with Oladipo, I think he is at around his ceiling. And since he's going to the West, I don't expect him to get any All-Star appearances anytime soon.
Well, it's interesting because there's some rumors about him pushing to get moved to Miami, right?
You brought up the pre-pod. Yeah, Like, there's some reports that he already wants to get out of Houston and go to Miami, which I thought was very interesting.
I think he'd fit right in with the culture there. He's a hardworking guy. He's been defensive-minded his whole career. Well. Yeah. No, he definitely has that stuff. He definitely has – I mean, his appeal in his all-star season and his breakout season was he is an elite defensive guard who now he's always been super athletic, but now he is showing the ability to score off the dribble. He's showing the ability to bury some threes, and, you know, his three-point percentage isn't exactly in the top stratosphere of the league right now, but he's a multifaceted guard. I think that he's a guy that teams are going to give some money and want to see if they can get back to the level that he showed.
All right, you want to move on to NFL now?
Yeah.
Yes, please. Please.
David feels alive.
I'm so excited.
So NFL playoffs started, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're in the divisional round. There are 8 teams left in the playoffs vying for this Super Bowl. I think it's been a while since we've seen a team, I think, like Kansas City that has just been favored to win the Super Bowl outright from week 1 to week 17 and into the playoffs. And I think conversations about the playoffs now are just who has the best chance to stop Kansas City. And that was something Ethan and I were talking about before this. So I want to pose that question again. What team do you see could be the biggest roadblock to Kansas City repeating for being the first team to repeat since 2004?
So, yeah, I think it's got to be the Ravens at this point. I know there's a lot of good discussion to be had. The Bills look a really good, a little shaky against the Colts. But I think we've kind of been on this road for a while where the NFL, not to keep going back to the end, but the NFL seems to be becoming a bit more star-driven in the way the NBA is. And I feel like the whole Lamar versus Mahomes thing is something we've been building up to for a while now. And I think the question is, does Lamar get it done in the playoffs? And you saw against the Titans that he could. And I think more than any other, even not Packers, great team, but it's been talked about, like Rodgers, Mahomes, I don't think it's quite on the level as in terms of impact players in all phases of the game, running and passing, that Lamar and Mahomes are. And it's not just them either. They're good overall teams too.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been steadfast that I think the Chiefs are going to repeat. I agree. It'd be the first time a repeat happened since like the Patriots in the early 2000s, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're far and away. But I think if there's any team to do it, I think it'd have to be a team that kind of takes hold from the start of a game. And like, I think the big weakness for the Chiefs, if there is one, is that it seems like they're kind of content to just like lull you to sleep as a team. Like they always seem to feel that like they don't have to get ahead from the start. They can. There's this feeling that they have like a solid enough team that they can, over the course of a game, just show that they are the better team. I think it's otherworldly talent to just kind of punch them in the mouth from the start. In my opinion, I think that's the best way they're going to get upset in these playoffs.
Yeah, I think the Chiefs are particularly difficult to pull an upset against just because they're an explosion team. Kind of like what you were saying, is they don't necessarily need to dominate like time of possession or anything like that, because they know even if the opposing defense is playing perfectly for 90% of the game, it takes one play for them to go down the field and put points on the board. So that's kind of what makes it so difficult for like even good defenses to hold them down over the course of the game. And I think the team in that could have beaten them in that sense just got eliminated in the Tennessee Titans. But yeah, I think for me the biggest unknown, and the biggest team that I think has a shot to knock them off would be the Buffalo Bills. I think Josh Allen to Stephon Diggs has been one of the most immediately successful quarterback receiver connections I've seen in a while. And they're a team that's also just very complete. I mean, defensively, they have guys like Tre'Davious White and Tremaine Edmonds who are playing outstanding. And offensively, Josh Allen can, like a Lamar Jackson, can affect the game running or passing. You have guys like Devin Singletary who are playing really well. And that team really, really needs to be able to prove that they can beat a team like the Chiefs. The Colts are good, but they weren't like the type of power that you need to beat when you play in the playoffs and you want to go deep in the playoffs. So I've been holding on to the well, let's wait and see for me to admit that Josh Allen wasn't a bust. I don't think I've seen enough of them to say this team has a shot to beat the Chiefs, but I think they could. I think their ceiling is certainly high enough that they could beat the Chiefs.
Okay, so that's projecting forward. Let's look back a little bit to the first round, and I just wanted to pose the question to you guys of what win surprised you the most? Because I know there's always upsets in any given playoff bracket. What wins from the first round of the NFL playoffs surprise you guys the most?
It wasn't necessarily a surprise in that I did predict that the Browns would win, but it was just the fashion in how they won. Like, it was a blowout from the first quarter alone. And I was watching the game, and after the first quarter, they were up, like, what, 24-0?
Jeez. It was 28 after the first. And,
oh, my God. And, yeah, it just felt like I watched the first quarter, watched the second quarter, just left for the third. I had to go somewhere. Came back in the fourth. The Steelers seemed to be putting up a fight in the fourth, but it was way too little too late. And it seemed like they'd already given up by the end of the first quarter. It was quite brutal. I don't know what you guys thought about that, but yeah, that was rough.
Well, you know, speaking of that being unexpected, I'm reminded a bit of way back early in the season. I think it was the Titans playing. It was a game that got delayed because of COVID protocols. I think it was Titans Bills. And the Titans had a bunch of COVID issues, people out. So everyone assumed they were going to lose that game. But it was the same situation as the Browns Steelers game. They actually won that game in a blowout. I think that's the one X factor that I don't want to take anything away from what the Browns accomplished. They're a great team. I'm glad for that fan base. They're turning it around. But that's the one X factor I can think of, and that everyone thought all those COVID issues were going to hurt the Browns, but you can see where there might be a certain some advantage you can get from that, and that the other team doesn't know what to game plan against. You kind of have the element of surprise. That's the one thing that I think of. Why did that game go the way it did? Why was it so unexpected that you can think like maybe this could have an issue? Because these are uncharted waters. We don't know how these kinds of things are going to affect teams because we've just never seen anything like it. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, you just hope that you don't have similar situations going forward in the playoffs. I mean, it would suck if a game has to get delayed or a team has to go in without a star player. Yeah, I think that was the most surprising element of it to me, that the team without their head coach was not the team that looked like a mess. And I think more so than the Browns looking like a great team, I think the Steelers looked like a mess. I think the Steelers looked like a team that had only won, one game since week 11. I wish Alex was here. Whenever your game starts with a snap going over your QB's head for points, it's not a good sign.
Had to get that shot in.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think that game may have been more an indication of what is wrong with the Steelers kind of internally as opposed to what's going right with the Browns. I think if after watching that game, I mean, Big Ben was able to turn it around somewhat, but I mean, two picks in the first quarter is not obviously ideal. That doesn't help your team get a shot to win it. I think just being generally disorganized, their defense couldn't stop anything in the first quarter. I think we're at the point where you have to start to wonder what Mike Tomlin's future is in Pittsburgh, as well as should they start to look towards life after Big Ben after this game, or after the way this season just collapsed for him.
All right, well, that's that for the Steelers, but what are some games you guys are looking forward to watching this round? We got four matchups. One of them, I guess, seems... you guys don't really think the Browns can beat the Chiefs, I guess, but...
No, I don't.
So, yeah, what's one that you guys think will be fun to watch? Maybe something to keep a channel tuned to.
I think it has to be Ravens-Bills. Like, that's the obvious choice, but, like, just the discussion we had about, like, which is the most likely threat to the Chiefs. Like, it's funny because I almost feel like this year's Bills team kind of reminds me of last year's Ravens team. Like, I wonder, it's the same way where as a regular season team, they were just such a juggernaut. But I wonder from what I've seen with the Colts, if that's going to last into the playoffs. Like, the Ravens, it's a cliche, but like, they've been here before. I'm just wondering if we can see the Bills rise to that level and gain that experience enough to beat, like, what's the Ravens have looked like. They're probably the only team that's looked more unbeatable than the Bills in the later half of the season and playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely excited for that game. A little bit of homerism, but I'm also very excited for Saints Buccaneers. I think the Buccaneers offense has really been rounding into form towards the back half of the season. I think that's kind of expected. I think Tom Brady usually starts season slow, or at least he did in New England.
Tom Brady's still here?
Yeah, Tom Brady's still here. He's a 43-year-old goddamn quarterback. On a 2-year contract. I say this all the time, every time I talk about the Bucs, but that team has just too many weapons for a defense to successfully be able to deal with. I think Antonio Brown lately has been reminding people that he's Antonio Brown. Obviously Chris Godwin is there. Mike Evans has been playing outstanding. Gronk has been stepping in to play the role that he's been asked to be played. I think they're different than the last time they played the Saints. That being said, the Saints are no joke. They look like the second best team in the NFL to me, behind the Chiefs. Their defense, what are they, top three, like number two in the league. So Drew Brees, Michael Thomas had a very good game last week. Alvin Kamara has been playing well this year. They're just as dynamic on offense. So that'll be a really exciting game if it manages to stay close, if the Bucs defense can keep them in it.
All right, and I'll wrap this segment up with one more question to you guys. Give me your stupidest prediction for the remainder of this NFL playoffs.
Let me think.
Can I go first?
Yeah, definitely.
I feel like mine is that, like, we're just speaking of the Saints and the Bucks. Like, we didn't mention, like, the Saints blew out the Bucks earlier in the year. And I think, like, overall, they're just, like, the better team. But that said, Tom Brady against, I don't care if he's 43, against the Saints in the playoffs in the late 2010s or early 2020s, like, I know the Saints are going to blow it, man. Like, I know that something insane is going to happen. I don't know. Maybe, like, they didn't notice that they, like, just put the Tuck rule back on the books, like, something, and somehow it's going to play a part in this game. Like, it just goes beyond logic. You just have to know the Bucs are going to win this game somehow and make New Orleans Saints fans more miserable.
Yeah, I think that would also probably be my dumb prediction as well. I think the don't count out touchdown Tom energy is very, very powerful once you get towards the like divisional conference championship rounds. I don't know. We were having this discussion of this isn't really a prediction, but we were having this discussion of the early 2000s, mid 2000s draft class quarterbacks compared to the early 2010s quarterbacks. And I think the AFC NFC like divide kind of represents like the divide between the old generation of quarterbacks and the new generation of quarterbacks. Cause you have Rodgers as well as Brees and Brady in the NFC. And then the AFC, you got three QBs from one, what draft class, 2018.
Telling me you're sleeping on Jared Goff.
I will always sleep on Jared Goff. I will forever sleep on Jared Goff after he, scored 3 points in the Super Bowl. Not a Jared Goff guy. I think the Rams are good, but I don't know. I don't think Jared Goff is good enough to win in the playoffs.
Mike, what's your dumb prediction? Do you have any?
I think that feeds into my stupid take. I think that the Rams actually take this one over the Packers. Mm. I'm not a Goff guy either. Like, he's just McVay's instrument, but I think that McVay as a coach is just he's just so smart. he's one of my favorite play callers in the league. So I think and especially due to the fact that the Packers don't really have offensive weapons, it's like you kind of know who they're going to go to.
Right.
I feel like it's a little bit predictable. And I think the Rams will take advantage of that and just play call their way out of this round. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that defense is legit, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Well, we've got in our takes for the NFL. We've done our piece on non-NBA topics. Everybody, let's give ourselves a hand.
That's why you need me here.
Yeah, no, that's what we pulled in David. You know, hey, one last job, buddy. But that's going to be it for today. Before we move into our 2 cent finish, the segment of our show where we go around and we give some other monologues, soliloquies, opinions about things that are happening in sports. We're going to each go around and have some time allotted to us. So does anybody want to go first with our 2 cent finish?
I want to go first.
Hit us.
All right. So we've been talking pro football. We've been talking NBA, but the college football national championship was also this week, and you saw Alabama just absolutely run through a very good Ohio State team. And I want to talk about this guy, Devontae Smith. I am young. Devontae Smith is the best college receiver I've seen in my life. I think going into draft season, you have to pick this guy top five. Like if you're sitting with a top five pick, I don't know how you take anyone over Devontae Smith. If you're the Dolphins, if you're the Lions, like, I really don't think it has to be a need thing. I think this guy, I mean, 200 yards, 3 touchdowns in the first half of the championship game. I think this guy is just too talented to pass up, and I think he's got to be a top five pick. I would be shocked if I wouldn't be shocked, but I think it would be stupid for GMs to pass up on this guy if you're not strictly quarterback needy. That's my piece.
All right. I guess I'll go next. So I actually want to talk about something outside the sports you've been talking about too. Actually, so since we last recorded, there have been other things going on in the world in general. A lot of things, actually, but maybe we could go into that for a while. But there was a election in Georgia where two Democratic candidates won, gave Democrats control of the Senate. And I think it's interesting to talk about how this relates to sports in that a large part of that has been credited to WNBA players. Like, one of the candidates won, legitimately his entire campaign was fueled a lot by WNBA players. But, like, even beyond electoral politics, I think throughout the years, WNBA players and organizations, but especially the players, have made their voices known on a lot of important issues that they didn't really have to if they didn't want to. And I think it's just struck me that obviously we're in a bit of a weird place with sports, like in terms of like fans attending or even like the state of like seasons happening or whatever. But I think that's just struck me as like, I think we all need, as fans, need to support that WNBA more. So I think a lot of us get up on our high horse and say like, oh, if we aren't one of those people making those stupid memes about like, oh, WNBA sucks or whatever, like, oh, we're the cool progressive fans. But if we really want to, if we really want to show that we don't believe these, like, that crap, like, we need to put our money where our mouth is. And like, it's not like we're just should be doing this out of the goodness of our heart. It's good basketball. It's good. Like, there's some talented players that are, like, really great storylines. So I think what's just come across to me is that, like, I think it's on us right now that we should be supporting these players in that league.
Michael, you got us? Or
yeah, sure. I can step in. I want to quickly touch on David. I actually find that really interesting because I'm one of the people that I like two wide receivers over Devontae Smith, even though he won the Heisman. I like Ja'Marr Chase and Jaylen Waddle both over
Waddle.
Yeah, I actually really like Waddle still. He's just so electric, and I feel like even you can't go wrong with Devontae. He's amazing in the championship game, but I also feel like it's a bit of recency bias in that people are kind of. I saw some Jerry Rice comparisons and stuff, and I was like, wow.
Right.
And I feel like that's a little out of left field, but
right.
Yeah, that's just my take on your 2 cents.
Sure.
Yeah, my 2 cents is back to basketball. I'm a basketball guy. But, yeah, I just wanted to quickly shout out Becky Hammon for being the first woman like head coach, technically. Because of Greg Popovich being
You got to check.
Yeah. But, like, yeah, she did a really good job of coaching that game. I watched it. I watched it back because I'm not going to watch the Spurs if I don't have to. But with that news, I watched the game, and she actually coached she coached very well. And even though they took – I think they lost that game, but the play calling was actually really impressive. So, yeah, I'll just quickly shout out to Becky Hammon on that one. Yeah, that's my 2 cents.
All right, and I will bring us home. And as always, my 2 cents has to be about the Boston Celtics. And – I think it's an interesting one in this particular moment in history, just given all the things that are happening right now. It is worth talking about the fact that the Celtics have now had 3 games in a row postponed due to either team not reaching roster requirements, minimum roster requirements. You have to have 8 players on your roster going into a given NBA game. And the reason for that is obviously because of the pandemic and because of the protocols that the NBA has put into place for contact tracing and for players who have either come into contact or have contracted the virus themselves. And this is worth talking about because the NBA is kind of doing a bad job about it. So one of the interesting things is that Jason Tatum was suspected to have potentially have come down with COVID after a game with the Wizards. And several of the Celtics players were again, isolated due to social distancing and to contact tracing procedures. And that left them with a little bit less of a roster than they may have wanted. However, it is worth mentioning that not the whole roster was done that. That wasn't done to the whole roster. That wasn't done to most of the Wizards players. There were a couple of Wizards players that was done to. And this is because the NBA's definition of coming into contact with another player is if you're within 6 feet of them for more than 15 minutes at a time. I think that's an insane definition given what we know about COVID. We literally saw Jason Tatum and Bradley Beal like shaking hands, you know, getting very close to each other's business after the game. But because it wasn't for 15 minutes at a time, we're not going to isolate Bradley Beal. This is clearly just a, you know, the NBA is doing their best to say like, oh, you know, we are isolating people. We're isolating known cases. We're isolating people that we know, you know, maybe bunked with them. Maybe we're sitting next to them on the bench. But they're doing their best to not apply that to as many people as possible, when in reality, the safest thing to do is to just isolate the whole team for 2 weeks after there's a confirmed case. That happened with the Sixers. They made the Sixers play. The Sixers had like 9 available players, and they're like, all right, that's more than 8. Y'all got it. And Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons sat that one out, needless to say. We now know that a Wizards player has contracted COVID after that game against the Celtics, and he wasn't contact traced. He wasn't isolated from the rest of his team. He continued to travel with them. So we have no idea how far this is going to spread. And I just think the league is doing themselves a disservice. Maybe keeping a couple of these games on the air is going to fulfill their weird network TV requirements for you got to fulfill these many games in a season or whatever it is. But I just feel like in the long term, we have seen that COVID has left young athletes, there was that college student, with conditions to their heart that increase the risk for arrhythmia and for real issues when you're an athlete who their heart rate is elevated at a very at a very consistent pace. I think long term, this is not a good look for the league. I think it's a mismanagement, and they should be a little bit more liberal about their use of contact tracing. But those are just my 2 cents. That was the guy's 2 cents. And this has been the Brown Sports Convos Podcast Zoom Edition. Once again, thank you so much for listening. We are on Twitter at BRN Sports Convos. And we have a URL. You can find us at sportsconvos.com. I'm really excited about that. We are, like I said, heading back into the semester. So the club is going to be back active again. We're going to be back at it. Probably going to see a little bit more activity in the group chat as well. So keep your eyes out for more stuff from us, and we will get back to you next time.